Hello, everyone. Cody Cooper here. This is a special episode of Linux to the Rest of Us. We have an interview, and by we, I mean I'm also joined here by my good friend Martin Rambo Obando. How's it going, Martin?
Hey, it's going really good, Cody. I'm glad to be doing this interview with you and excited for this one. Not that I'm not excited for other ones.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the interview, Martin and I both got to meet Ikey Doherty in person. For those of you who don't know Ikey, he is the current developer of Evolve OS and the former developer of Solus OS and Linux Mint and Debian Edition before that. And a huge contributor to the open source community. Great guy. Followed his work for the past couple of years. And he's Irish, so he's lives, I believe, in London right now. Is that right, Martin?
Yeah. He's currently living in London.
Yeah. Anyway, he happened to be in our neck of the woods in Oregon for a few weeks on some business, and we happened to arrange a meeting in person. And it was a fantastic interview that we recorded specifically for the show. But on top of that, we had a wonderful evening that was facilitated by Martin, which I want to thank you for right now. It was a wonderful time.
Oh, I had a blast. It was good. I mean, I went out to pizza, good pizza, good beer, good conversation. Mm-hmm. All ended up in just a great interview.
Yeah, we got to talk to Ikey over the night, over the course of, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours. There were some really good topics, but we recorded this interview specifically for you guys so we could answer some questions, give you some insight into the man and his sort of the way he does things as far as software. And it really it made me respect him even more. I mean, I already enjoy his work, and it's reached out to a lot of different people, and people tend to generally like his work, but knowing more of sort of his ethics and morals behind it and why he does it just helped open that door, and now I will definitely support him in the future. So we're going to go ahead and throw it to the interview now, and we'll come back at the end here in just a little bit to wrap up and give you some final thoughts. But by all means, please enjoy.
All right. Hello, everyone. I'm Cody Cooper here. I'm interviewing Ikey Doherty. Ikey, thank you for being here.
No problem. My pleasure.
In your hotel room.
Yep.
I should have said thank you for having us. Also here with Martin Rambo Obando. How's it going, Martin?
I'm doing very well. Excited to hang out with everybody and spend some time with Ikey and just see what's going on and actually meet the man behind the legend.
Yes, we are actually here in person in the same room with him, and because he actually happens to be in the Northwest right now. What brings you into this part of the world and our part of the country?
Just over here with work. Got a conference here, meeting up with some guys that I work with, and yeah, just enjoying.
Nice.
Meet up with you guys.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Most important part. <Yo. laughs> Well, cool. I think that goes the other way around, but we'll let you take it.
Right, right. So, obviously, I know a bit about you, but we'll just kind of start the interview at the kind of beginning. What really got you interested in the technology as far as, you know, kind of a youngster, or when did you start?
So, I guess a few years ago, I kind of, you know, like everyone else, I was using Windows and stuff like that. And I got to a point where I needed to understand how things worked. And it's a bit of a sad obsession. I was like, okay, I understand that like Windows are showing on the screen. How is it doing that? And yeah, downward spiral from there. Like, absolutely hooked and destroyed my life. No.
As often Windows does.
Yeah, so it's like, I just had to learn how things worked and started picking up things like Java and that. And eventually kind of transitioned over to Linux because Windows didn't fulfill my requirements. I needed to know more, and I needed more control. I needed to see how the system worked. And running a proprietary OS, you kind of can't do that. But if you have an open source operating system, well, you have the whole world at your fingertips, and you can just rip it apart, change it. You can just keep breaking stuff until you learn how it works. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I did, and I kind of can't walk away.
So not necessarily being the basic consumer as far as taking a backseat and enjoying the experience for what it is, but you felt more compelled to learn how the gears were turning.
Well, I think it's a bit of both. So I wanted to learn how things were working because I just wasn't happy. So I was like, maybe I could make something better. Eventually I could learn how these things work to try and fix them. Because, yeah, I mean, we all start out as consumers in one way or another. Mm-hmm. But it was never good enough. So I had these programs that were broken. I needed to understand why they were broken. And then I was frustrated. There was no way I could fix them. The companies behind them, they didn't want to fix them. There was no accessible route to get these things done. And then, you know, I found out about open source, where you've got a fix. Well, you know, we'll take that. Thanks.
So what was your first, I mean, at least your most basic experience with the open source community?
With the open source community or with using open source?
We'll say using open source first.
Well, I kind of went about it the wrong way. I started out with Slackware.
Okay.
Then moved over to Gentoo for a while. Several panic attacks later, I actually played with Zandros for a while.
Oh, wow.
With all the one-click stuff. And then, yeah, I took a hiatus for about 2 years. And then I came back. So I want to learn how this stuff works now. I want to get involved at the deep end. So I started looking at mailing lists, forums, getting the magazines. I mean, at the time, you was getting things like the 2600 design, which, yeah, it's not particularly open source friendly in that respect.
Right.
But it sparked an interest. And then I started looking at mailing lists, forums, IRC channels, and I kind of got sucked in.
Well, I think that, at least from my experience, which I haven't experienced it myself, but I have had friends and people in the community as well who have started off with the quote-unquote harder distributions, yet learning a lot more in the beginning as far as how distributions work. And not only learning how to custom tailor and or build from scratch, like in the case of Linux from scratch, or our Slackware or Gentoo, but there seems to be a lot more not only understanding if you go that route in the beginning, but also a lot more curiosity kind of be spurned from that, which seems to be in your case.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So, I mean, I have no problem with the Ubuntu's and the user-friendly. Something I like to target myself is user-friendly systems. But for someone who wants to learn a system, it's kind of not good because it's like transitioning from one Windows-like system to another Windows-like system.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything is kind of done for you, which is great. But if you want to learn about the system, that doesn't help you. You need something that's a bit, you know, a bit more bare metal. Something that's a bit more hardcore. And it's like, well, I've got to work to get these things done. And I need to understand why this thing just failed. Why didn't that compile?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't that install? Why is this module not inserted into the kernel? You know, and that's a great foundation of knowledge to have if you want to dive a little bit deeper into Linux. So, yeah, it doesn't hurt to play with one of the harder ones. Otherwise, you can just reinstall.
Right, exactly, yeah. No, there definitely is a bit of a shift, let's say hypothetically, from moving from Windows 7 to Ubuntu.
Mm.
Or in the case as of late, from Windows XP to anything Linux.
Sure.
But at the same time, yeah, you're running from one proprietary environment to potentially another locked down proprietary environment.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, there seems to be not necessarily a fine line, but a larger gap in between, I just want it to work and I don't care how it works, to let's talk to the man behind the curtain.
Sure.
Yeah. Very cool. Speaking specifically about your history with development, you yourself have been involved with a number of open source projects dating back to the earliest being Linux Mint or LMDE.
Well, sure. My first projects that went under a pseudonym, I guess, a pseudonym, whatever it is. I don't have to use these words in real life.
There you go.
So the first time I really went forward with my real name and put my stamp on anything would have been Linux Mint. I got involved with them around Linux Mint 6, and, you know, I just got contributing over IRC and started talking to them. I was like, you know, I can see where this is going, and it'd be nice to have, because at the time, desktop Linux, it wasn't the case of today where we go, aha, the year of desktop Linux. You know, that thing's been and gone. So at the time, it was like, well, we don't have a desktop Linux. We have attempts at desktop Linux. So I was like, I can help make this happen. We can do this. And yeah, my first big project with them, I mean, I had Mint backup, and then we had the installer for Linux Mint Debian Edition, LMDE, which I actually created myself. And yeah, I guess that gave me the first big taste of open source. And yeah, I wanted to go further with that.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got a taste for it and wanted to dive in even more. And even though I was with Mint for a while, my end goals still differed greatly from what Linux Mint wanted. And I had to do things separately to achieve my own personal goals, how I wanted to go about things.
But it was probably a worthwhile experience, at least being in that type of environment, but at the same time, seeing where, quote-unquote, management or the direction may be heading, and then not necessarily disagreeing with it, but saying, I would want to do something different if I were in charge.
Well, sure. If I hadn't have done that, I never would have realized that I didn't want that in the first place.
Right.
So you have to do it.
Yep.
And I did. Yeah, I learned a few things from it, and it gave me a sense of direction. What I wanted, I realized what I wanted out of systems. And ironically, it wasn't what I'd created. Or rather, it wasn't what I'd ended up with,
mm-hmm.
what I created, was a little bit different. So yeah, I finally realized, like, okay, so this is the path I'm headed down now. If I hadn't have done that, I wouldn't have found out.
That's a very good point. No, yeah, it's always interesting what kind of experiences sort of mold your vision, your direction. Sure. Yeah. So after dealing with Mint directly and then LMDE from the ground up, it transitioned into, was it directly into Solo SOS?
Well, there was a little bit of a gap. I stayed away for a little while, and I watched where various Linux distros were going somewhat painfully, if I'm honest.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, to be honest, the same is still true today. So I kept seeing people saying, we have this user-friendly distro. Oh, great. So if I open a file, is it going to tell me what package it's going to install for me that will automatically handle that? No. Things like that weren't actually integrated, even though the technology existed through package kits. So stuff like that wasn't even integrated, and that was a thing. So distributions were literally a distribution of packages. A lacking point across all of them was integration. So we had all these great technologies out there. No one was putting them together in a cohesive manner. Wasn't like, oh, so this is my desktop experience. It's like, no, this is my desktop loosely bolted on top of a distro underneath that might just, you know, get you through on a subset. So after a while, I kind of got sick of it, and I needed something for me. So I created SolarSwiss with the hope of creating something a bit more user-friendly that other people could use and would go out to integrate all those features so you could just use your operating system. I mean, we had things like the first run wizard. Looking back, it was probably the ugliest tool I've ever created. Unfortunately for me, that had my name in the screenshots. So okay. I can't disown that.
Right.
But I mean, that took care of drivers, firewall, you know, even update frequency. Things that guys coming over from Windows at the time would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bam, it got out of your way in your system, updated, installed drivers for you. You had your codecs. If things were missing, it would go and install them for you, which was different. You could open an unknown file inside any media player, inside SolarSwiss, and it installed the codec for you.
Oh, wow, okay.
Which is the kind of thing that I've always been interested in, the integration aspect.
Yeah, because ultimately, I mean, especially when you talk about standard formats, that itself is a loose term nowadays, sure. with all sorts of different technologies being developed. So if you specifically think about media players, if I throw something in VLC, it's probably going to work.
Yeah.
But to have a distribution actually reach out through packages and pull out down the codecs that you would need, that was seen, especially 2 or 3 years ago, that seemed quite revolutionary at the time.
Yeah. And I mean, it's something that we'd had for a while. So through a GStreamer package kit backend, every media player that wasn't VLC was pretty much guaranteed to be using GStreamer. They say, oh, okay, this needs this codec. Aha, we have it in the repo. Do you want me to install that for you? Yes. Play the file again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that existed back then, but nobody was integrating this kind of thing. I was like, we should get all of this stuff and put it together. Something that's usable that you don't have to interfere with. You don't have to throw a wrench at it just to make it work.
Or in the case of some, I'm thinking of a particular printer manufacturer or a particular technology company that's famous for printers, throwing all of the codecs and or wink-wink language packages in at once and making it a multi-gig file as opposed to getting what you need on demand.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that being a much more viable option. Yeah. So with SolarSwiss specifically, you got into, was it 1.2 as far as the 1 series, or was
actually,
it higher?
Actually, went to 1.3 in the end.
1.3 in the end, okay.
In the end.
Yeah, in the end. And then you had the 2 series after that, which didn't quite make it to...
So we got to, I believe, Alpha 13, something around that figure. SolarSwiss 2 was built from scratch. So all the time I was building SolarSwiss 1, many, many patches had to be made. Many packages had to be configured ever so slightly different because you need everything to integrate. In the end, I was maintaining 7,000 packages for SolarSwiss 1. Wow. And that was modifications to Debian packages as well as my own imports and from scratch packages, which, to be quite blunt, is a monumental pain in the back end. I just couldn't do it anymore. And I always knew that was going to be the case if I derived from another distro. It didn't matter what distro it was. For what I needed to do, I needed ultimate control. And I couldn't achieve that as a derivative project. So SolarSwiss 2 was from scratch. Unfortunately, a lot of people didn't want it to be what I wanted it to be. So my vision was basically a very small system that did what it needed to do, that carried on with its existing goals and didn't really support anything outside that, which meant having a small package base. It meant being optimized to its target. Unfortunately, people wanted another Debian, which made no sense because Debian exists.
Yeah.
Or if you want a modified, prettier, more improved, you have Ubuntu or you have Linux Mint. Those already exist. That wasn't what I was out to create. And unfortunately, that was the perception that people had of SolarSource 2. And in the end, it was going nowhere because it was being dragged in several directions. And stupidly, I didn't stop it from being dragged. So in the end, I killed it.
And by being dragged, what specifically are you talking about? Just people's...
Internally and externally.
Mm.
People supposedly close to the project did more harm than good. And unfortunately, I didn't really know how to say no to them at the time because it was my community. It was my helpers. And, you know, we make foolish mistakes, but in the end, it cost me a project. And the only way to address the issue at the time was to stop the project because I did not like what it was becoming. I had a vision of what I wanted to create, and it was becoming some enormous, bloated piece of crapware.
Mm.
And that's the only way I'd explain it, because it was getting to the point I was ashamed to put my name to the project.
Mm.
I didn't want any involvement with it, so I killed it.
Well, specifically in creative endeavors, and I do consider software development to be a creative endeavor, but when you're talking about creative writing, there's a term, killing your darlings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you realize that at a certain point you need to sort of cut things loose.
Sure.
For the betterment of the greater good, or, you know, the progress of the overall goal.
Sure.
And it's sort of like it came to that point.
Yeah, I realized I could do more good with SolarSource being dead at the time.
Mm.
And I'd like to think, in the time since SolarSource passed away, that I have done more good, and I've helped more people, and I've helped inspire and motivate more people, and just generally help out and get other people into the scene, if you like, and raise an awareness of general issues in Linux. And I think since I did that, I've managed to do more good than I did through the twilight days of SolarSource.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what I want to do. I want to help people, but I also want to create something that I enjoy creating, because at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, because this is, I mean, you can call it a project, but ultimately it is a lot of your time and effort, regardless of, you know, where that time or effort comes from. But it's you being put into it. And if you're not putting your efforts into something worthwhile, then why are you doing it?
What's the point?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And that's the way I felt about it. I felt disconnected from the project.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't want to do it anymore.
Well, and then when you get to that point, you realize you're doing no good, so it's almost better to let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, transitioning from that, I'll ask you kind of a more broad question. When we're specifically talking about developing a distribution, before you started doing it, what did you think it would be like? And then now that you've done it, what is it actually like?
So, that depends on which way you go. I would argue I now have somewhat extensive experience in various tacks in approaching Linux distro development. So, at the very bottom rung, you have your respins, which take something like Ubuntu, stick a couple of codecs and a wallpaper on it, and say, well, hey, gave you a distro. No, that's a respin.
Yeah.
Massive, massive, massive difference, right? So then you have your derivatives, which we then qualify as a distro. This is just my own naming scheme, but that's what I would qualify as a distro. And I would argue that point. They are something, essentially, that add their own repository. They have their own package read up on top of that. They ship their own custom packages. They change the configuration. It might only be 10 packages, but that still qualifies them as a distro because they're doing actual package work. They're hosting their own repositories. They have their own infrastructure. Hopefully, they have their own bug tracker as well. You'd hope.
Yeah.
It can always happen. That qualifies them really as a derivative because they are based on an upstream work. They are changing things. That's what SolarSource 1 started as. It was always a derivative. Unfortunately, when you're modifying and carrying and altering 7,000 packages on top of that, which is a good subset of the applicable Debian repository, you realize you're probably closer to fork, which is where you don't want to be, unless you actively chose that. You don't want to find out one day, looking at your repo, you accidentally forked Debian. You don't want to do that. And then I guess you have your tier one distributions, which is something built from scratch, like... Fedora comes from Red Hat, but so like your Fedoras, your Debians, your Gentoos, or even SolarSource 2, or Arch Linux, all built from scratch. So they are your top levels. They actually don't have an upstream. They are built by their developers. And so for me, yes, building from scratch initially is most certainly the hardest work. I mean, you've got to prepare your toolchain. You have to prepare your packaging. You have to prepare your build systems, your infrastructure. You've got to make sure everything's in sync. You've got to make sure you have dynamic linking consistency. You then have to maintain the security. There's a lot to it. The beauty is, once you actually have that system, you own that. You don't need to worry about upstream breakage. You are the control point. You don't have to worry about a random version coming in, which you have this problem with derivatives. Something might be pushed in an upstream package that breaks all of NVIDIA GLX. True story. Happened. Still a bit sore. So, I mean, it's definitely the hardest to start with, but it depends on which way you're going to do it. If you're trying to be something that's widely used as a daily driver and you're going from scratch, that's a lot harder to do because it's simple things like security. You know, that should be enough to put anyone off.
Oh, yeah.
Usually.
Mm-hmm. You'd think so. So, as far as your goals with... Let's start with SolosOS 2, because that was essentially, like you said, built from the ground up and completely different from the 1X series.
Yeah.
What were, at the time, when you either got it running or when you decided to sort of branch off and make that, what were your goals with that at the time?
So, to start with, I wanted something, one, that I was fully in control of. I didn't want any upstream breakage, because I was done with that. I needed to maintain everything, you know, in a sensible fashion. I actually also needed to make packaging simpler, because as much as Debian's package manager is the most commonly used package manager, by their own statistics, by the way, I have no care whatsoever for statistics. I've actually seen RPM used far more than Deb, but that's irrelevant. I didn't use RPM either.
Mm-hmm.
So to actually maintain and build a Debian package is a lot of messing around. I mean, you need file after file after file just to do it. You need a make file style file. Was hard to say, just to build the package, even though it'll ship with its own make file. You need a copyright file, you need a changes file, you know, you need all of these files just to build a simple, trivial package, and you've got to do that for every single thing. So I'm not doing that. I am not maintaining this, because this is a nightmare to maintain. I wanted something simpler, so I wanted a simpler package manager, which is what I went for in the end. I wanted something that was light in terms of its footprint, the size of the distribution. I didn't need KDE, OpenBox, XFCE, PECWM. I didn't need any of those. I needed a GNOME-based desktop. I needed the technologies for GNOME in there. I needed the kernel. I needed the base system and any other applications I choose to throw on top. I didn't want to support all the other options. That's all I wanted. It was literally a target-specific system. That's it. And it had, obviously, the usual things. User-friendly, you know, fast, optimized. I'm about the millions upon millions of patches that I see in every other distribution apart from the Arch and Gentoo. Because they're not required. They are honestly not required. Oh, they may think they're required. CVEs, yes, I'll agree with that. You need to address a CVE. Build issues, yes. But when you look through something like Debian and you find, I mean, at the time, I was looking through the COPS package and found 37 patches in one package. You kind of want to beat your head off of a wall. Because you're looking, it's like, that's just one package. And you look somewhere else, and there's another patch, and then there's another patch, and this patch breaks this thing, and then this patch causes this thing to link incorrectly. So I don't want that. It can be more vanilla. Not all of the software in the world is this broken. So I decided that I wanted a more vanilla policy, which meant being independent. I had to control all the packages then.
Yeah.
So that's what I did.
Now, with SolosOS 2, the 2 series, was that you by yourself, or did you also have help?
No, in the beginning, I actually built that for myself. A couple of guys, in the end, helped contribute a few packages to it.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the tools, the build system, the base, the repository, the bootstrap, I did all that by myself.
Mm.
That was fun.
It sounds like it. Because much like what you've spoken to already, is that having that solid foundation to build off of is, for at least for what it sounds like me, that it's a big step. And once you have that done, that's when the real work begins.
Yeah, and you can kind of start throwing packages in. And then it's like, oh, that didn't build. Okay, because I'm missing that package. And then you start chasing it. And before you know it, you have a desktop. You better sped that up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, in the end, the last count was only about 700 source packages. The last work I was doing quite well.
So now that you've moved on from SolosOS, what is it you're working on right now?
So fast forward a few months, I'm working on something called Evolve OS, which is basically an experimental distribution. Experimental as in I don't recommend it as a daily driver. It's actually going to be using the same core system and packages that I created for Solaris Quest 2, mainly because I already created them and it would be kind of stupid not to use them again.
Mm-hmm.
That's throwing an awful lot of work away. And again, all the advantages I had last time. So one of the first things I did was actually remove the redundant packages that were introduced in the last cycle through Solaris Quest 2. So I trimmed most of the repo back, and it gives me somewhere now I can experiment with new technologies, and hopefully I can get guys coming over from other distros, other projects, who have something that needs testing in a distributed fashion that can't really afford to take the risk elsewhere. So they couldn't put it in Ubuntu, they couldn't put it in Debian itself, they couldn't put it in any other system, because that is expected to be a fully stable working release every time. This is somewhere they can come over and they can try other ideas. It could be something stupid, it could be something awe-inspiring, we don't know. It needs to be somewhere risk-free where people can try these out, somewhere that they have a way to distribute this new collaboration, and that's kind of what I'm trying to enable. And it allows me somewhere to freely experiment with no pressure.
Well, and that sounds like an optimal sort of environment to not only to create and foster, but like you said, for other developers to come in and try their ideas, because to a certain extent, you're keeping your arms open saying, no, come over and play in here. Let's see what we make of it. Because, yeah. And at the end of the day, so at least with my limited understanding of it, some of the greater things that did happen were, some of it were accidental or some of it were sort of a side intended purpose as far as the main purpose. But if fostered and given the right environment, it does bloom quite well.
Well, that's it. At the end of the day, I'm not creating a product. And that's as simple as it is. Most distributions out there need some form of financial support, need some kind of public backing, whereas this is not in any way a product at all. It's somewhere where you can just throw things in, and let's see if we can improve the desktop situation together.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that'll enable more people to come on board and see what they can do.
Much like an evolution of the current desktop process.
Yeah, and that's kind of the idea.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. So, aside from where it stands right now, and what you've already alluded to a certain extent, where do you see this project in your future, let's say 18 months, 2-3 years out?
Well, hopefully we've got some nice ideas that have gone into it that have been adopted in other distributions. And then just keep doing that. Just each time keep doing that. So basically this year I'm going to be getting a release out. It's a case of building all the tool chain and packages. Most of that's actually done. We're about 100 and something packages in, which is a case of just fixing a couple of little paths. Nothing really, really extensive needs to be done there. Most of that work is already done. And sticking my desktop in and giving something like that I can release, and it's like, oh, here's a playground. Here's somewhere for people to try out ideas. And hopefully users will also use it and go, ah, well, I had this great idea, but we've nobody who's actually interested in implementing this. What do you think of it? And they go, well, we'll try it. Give us your feedback and try implementing it here. See if it's something that's viable.
And it's great that you brought that up too, because not only is this a completely standalone distribution, but you're also creating an entirely different desktop environment as well.
Hmm. So the desktop is, I've been accused of copying Chrome OS's desktop for this. That's nonsense, because I already admitted that to start with. I made that quite clear that was a heavy source of inspiration. And I like it, I like Chrome OS, but the problem for me is I need a real Linux desktop. It's as simple as that. For me, it's not suitable to my workflow. I'm more of a guy who needs things offline than online.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Chrome OS is great, but it's just not personally for me. Because, again, I find myself more offline than I do online, which is probably contrary to a lot of people. Most people now are more online than they are offline. So I like the look, and I wanted something that was just a no-frills desktop. Kind of looked a bit like Chrome OS, and I wanted to leverage the existing GNOME technologies. I wanted to integrate. I didn't see the need for yet another GNOME fork to exist out there when any of the forks that actually currently exist of GNOME could easily have been achieved in the same fashion as mine, either through extensions or, in my case, writing an extra little bit of software to do the job for you. And in the case of Budgie, you're talking a couple of thousand lines of code, nothing more. Most of that is actually the panel. And that integrates with the GNOME window manager, you know, GNOME settings team and things like that.
Mm.
So the idea here is to avoid a fork and, in the easiest way possible, provide a clean, traditional, but modern desktop, you know, all the buzzwords that I try and avoid but end up using.
Right.
Not good at avoiding them.
Right, yeah. What I will say that that's quite unique with this project of yours is that you've been very active, at least more active than some and most, I should say, as far as giving your community updates. Not just, hey, the new release is going well, but actually showing us screenshots and animations as far as what you're working on. And when you talk about Budgie being compared to Chrome OS and you sort of saying that in the onset, to me, the elegance of Chrome OS is in fact simplicity and being very minimalistic, which a lot of people sort of gravitate to either through hardware limitations or after being sort of disenfranchised by all the whiz bang effects of modern distributions that we see nowadays.
Nonsense desktop,
right?
That still has some features.
Yes, yeah. That is still functional and still let me do what I need to do without being way too hardware intensive.
And I mean, realistically, if you actually look back at Solus OS 1, it takes more inspiration, technically, and say the way the menu works from Solus OS 1 and things like the Cardapio menu than it does from Chrome OS. Visually, it looks like Chrome OS. The way it actually acts is more similar to Solus OS 1 and the Cardapio menu. Except I didn't want to make something that looked like you had another GNOME 2 panel. That was why one of the first decisions is I'm making it transparent. You're not going to see the panel.
Mm-hmm.
There is no panel now.
Yeah, you almost have to activate it in order to
get much,
to
it yeah. at all. Yeah. I just didn't want another panel situation because even I eventually want to phase people away from this whole concept of panel and a rigid desktop because that's kind of not how life works. You know, you have a work top. I mean, even my table right now that we're looking at, it has things thrown on it. So there is no rigid setup. And I'm trying to demote the concept of a panel. So the transparent panel and menu is just like stage one and moving away from.
Well, and there is something to be said too about breaking the norm because too many people in not just the tech but all throughout walks of life, they'll be asked, so why are you doing it that way? And they'll say, well, we've always done it this way.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean it's the right way or the most effective way, but it's just that they're so used to it and they expect to do it that way that it becomes more second nature than actually being a conscious decision.
Yeah, and I mean, I do take somewhat of a disruptive role in the community, but I think it's needed. I think someone needs to be around who will throw random ideas out, who will create random things, because we don't have to keep doing things the same way. So I will generally meet a lot of resistance when I say, I want to look at new input methods, new forms of interaction, new ways of showing a window. People are like, whoa, no. You minimize a window and it goes to somewhere and you have a close button and you have this panel area and you have indicators. Oh, yeah, so like every desktop for the last 20 years, yeah, not interested. Hmm. Just not interested. So I'd like to disrupt things even more, to be honest.
Well, it's a perfectly good way to go about revolution and ultimately to not only be beholden to your vision, but to be open to changing it at your will.
Yeah, because I'm personally not looking for success in the projects. If I cause change and I cause people to reconsider things, they are the success. There's not a final release. There's not an end goal for any of these little ventures. What they do on the periphery is actually their primary aim.
Yeah, I've never encountered distribution where they say, or any sort of hardware system where they say, okay, it's done.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
No, it's done for this year.
Yeah.
Wait until January. You can buy another release.
Bugs, feature requests.
Okay. At the moment, I don't want to put you on the spot as far as expecting a release because you already said it'll be sometime, perhaps later this year. However, earlier current versions of Budgie are available through certain distributions, and where can we find those?
Right. So you're gonna find one. To be honest, a little bit out of date that's sitting for Fedora and OpenSUSE on the Open Build Service, which is build.opensuse.org, and then you just search Budgie, and you'll find it there, no problem. So the issue I'm now encountering is someone's just approached me and has made a build of Budgie. The real issue is I've just started porting to GNOME 3.12. The version of Ubuntu they've just built for only has 3.10. So I'm now having to branch the works and conditionally build certain features for each one until Ubuntu transitions to 3.12, which
is a little bit of a pain. So you're almost backtracking your work to accommodate for someone else integrating your work into another.
Yeah, but it'd be nice to see it tested in different environments and give everyone a try. So, yeah, it's a little bit more work, but I'm sure I can make it happen. And, yeah, I mean, we're going to be looking another few weeks because I'm out here for the rest of this week. And to be honest, I'm probably going to take a vacation when I get back.
Nice.
And then I'll look a couple of weeks, get a build out, and start ramping up the development again.
That's very good. Martin, do you have anything specific? No, not really.
Nothing, just enjoying the conversation.
Yeah, well, we've had a great time, including this conversation, with spending the evening with Ikey, so I really do thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
One last sort of question I wanted to ask you. Where can the community or people who want to support you go to support you in a variety of ways? Where can they contact you as far as supporting you, perhaps, you know, by testing your software or helping you in other means?
So basically I want to accept a donation because I'm creating my projects for many different aims, but none of them are financial. So should one of my projects evolve to the point that it's used and developed by other people, then that can be independently financed by donors. That's not a problem. I personally will not take because I have no need for them. That's not what I'm creating my projects for. If people want information from me, yeah, there's an evolveaware.com blog, yes. The easiest way to get hold of me is genuinely Google+. And you'll find me there, random screenshots, random ramblings about some project or another. But I'm easy enough to find on Google+. And, you know, just add me, talk to me. Just don't spam me, really.
Very good.
Because that last special offer, it was a lie.
Okay. And I can say from personal experience for following him on Google+, it's very also I will speak about this as kind of a unique experience of mine, and for the people who do follow you, have had followed you for the past couple of years, is that it is very interesting and refreshing to have sort of either you as a one person working on the project or at least leading a project being so vocal and letting your personality sort of shine through is refreshing, because you've been, as we spoke about earlier, tested by some commenters and some threads on G+ as far as why are you focusing your efforts on this versus that?
Because and it's my time.
That's right.
As simple as that. I mean, you know, I'm not a massively argumentative guy. I'm generally quite nice, but I'm, you know, I'll speak my mind too. And, you know, social media, that's what it's there for. Everyone has their opinion. You know, my opinion might be that your opinion's invalid. But, you know, if we're talking about simple things, we're talking about tech, we're talking about desktops, it's all good. It's
yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, yeah, please follow him on Google+. And I'm sure that later on, if not financially, as he said, he won't take them. But I'm sure that he's already said he's creating an environment for a new product to come in and test out. So if you do have something that may benefit from the growing garden that is EvolveOS, please contact him at Ikey Doherty at on Google+. And the desktop environment is Budgie. That is Budgie.
That's
it. Spell correct.
Yeah, I couldn't think of a real name.
No, it works quite well. I really do think it does. It's catchy enough. It almost sounds cute. I think that you should work on a small character to.
Yeah, I mean, we could always make an alternative to Budgie and call it Canary. But we'll see.
As long as there are plush toys to be made from that transition, I'm all for it.
See, now there's the money.
Oh, yeah. Well, all profits could be donated to a good cause. Who knows?
This is true. I kind of want a plush toy now, so I'm conflicted.
Oh, no, okay. Well, you are in the Great Northwest where plush toys abound all over.
Yeah, but you wouldn't let me get one from the shop.
That's true. Okay. Well, Ikey, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with us, and we hope to hear from you soon.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be around, you know, annoying people, making things. People say, why is he doing this? I'm quite happy to continue doing that.
Happiness comes through honesty.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, well, thank you again.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right, take care.
All right, so that was the interview. I hope you guys really enjoyed it. Martin, can you tell us a little bit more about the evening and how it went down?
Well, yeah, it was great. I, you know, surprised. Ikey's in town. Let's hook up. Let's get together. Get to know him. I know you mentioned before, and I have followed him. He ran use Solus OS. And so it was great to just sit down with him over some great food, over some great drinks, and just talk about what's his passion. You know, it's hard to get a sense of somebody just from Google Plus or from Twitter or from Facebook, but to really kind of sit down with somebody that we've kind of watched from a distance and kind of had in awe of, we really got to see what his passion was, where his heart was at, why he was doing what he was doing, and just getting a sense of just, I don't know, it was just this sense of awe, if you will, of just, I was really impressed with what he had to say. I was really impressed with where he was going with this and the reasons why certain things happened. You know, the reasons why mm-hmm. he did it. And I am just excited to see Evolve OS grow. Today it came out in alpha release, and that's exciting. I'm going to probably download it within the next couple weeks, because the distros are still kind of coming out, and mm-hmm. throw it on a test bed and really support Ikey and what he's doing, because he really has a heart and really does have a passion for the open source community.
Well put. No, yeah, he as of today, May 5th, he released a pre-alpha of Evolve OS. And for those of you who aren't already, if you know of his past as far as the projects he's been a part of, one of the things that's unique about this time around, at least from my experience, is the fact that he's giving regular updates on Google Plus as far as the how he's learning new software, learning about new technologies, new creative endeavors, in order to really pour his heart and soul into making this, you know, his best ever. So if you aren't following him on Google Plus, please do so, because if you want to get better updates rather than just maybe checking the website every once in a while, he's releasing screenshots, he's releasing, you know, starting some good conversations on there. So go on Google Plus, search for Ikey Doherty, that is Ikey, and then Doherty, and follow him, and you'll get regular updates from there. Please go to evolve-os.com. They will also be releasing news and updates as far as the releases, and that's where you can also download the latest builds and ISOs in order to give it a try for yourself. And yeah, I just can't, also, like you said, Martin, I can't wait to throw this on a test box and just mess with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of just supporting, you know, both Ikey, we have a big shout out to, you know, our friend Jonathan Adu and over at the acf.co. You know, guys, if you haven't been there, I mean, if you've listened to Linux for the Rest of Us at all, you know that he has been on. We've talked with him. We've met him. I got a chance to meet him for the first time a couple months ago, and just an awesome guy. So go over to the acf.co and support what he's doing, he has a passion, and he has a heart for making a distro that's available for people with disabilities, for visual and for and so go over and support Jonathan at the acf.co.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go. You can become a regular contributor to the Accessible Computing Foundation for as little as $2 a month. And I got to tell you, every time I see that money, in fact, today, the 5th is when they take the money out of my account every month. Every time I see that, I know that money's going toward a good cause, to helping them implement new technologies into not only Sonar, his distribution, which is now based off of Manjaro Linux, but those technologies that he is helping to develop and sort of maintain and become better are definitely being pushed upstream into other projects. So yeah, overall, it's a fantastic organization. Definitely go check it out. If you would like to send us a voicemail, please dial 7076-PODNUT and leave us a voicemail for the show. We will play them. We're coming back from a short break, but we'll have regular content out again soon. And having this interview was definitely something cool to have in the feed. I know that if I was still just a listener and I saw this come in the feed, I would just be like, oh my gosh. So yeah, please, by all means, if you like the interview, send us a voicemail. Let us know what you thought of it. If you don't want to leave a voicemail, you can send us an email to podcast@linuxtherestofus.com. And please give us your feedback on it as well, because if we get a lot of good positive feedback from this, let me just say that there might be more content like this coming in the future via PodNuts in one shape, way, or form of another. So, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. As always, thank you very much for listening, and please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us, it is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.